it's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to another episode of Talkin' Jazz. We are here live at the Epiphany Center for the Arts in Epiphany Hall, which is going to be opening up middle of April. So this is our test run here, and it's an honor to have Rajiv Haleem is here. We are talking about an event he's coming up. He's actually performing headlining at the Evanston Jazz Festival coming up February 15th. 7 p.m. at Evanston High School. I'll get all the plugs out here. 1600 Dodge Avenue. All of the information is on the Evanston High School website. You can get tickets. And there's clinics and things all during the day. So, Rajiv, thanks for stopping by.
Of course.
And this is pretty exciting, I mean, to be headlining at the Evanston High School Jazz Festival. That's like a legendary, long-time high school jazz festival in the area. They always have incredible performers. So, congratulations on headlining.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. The band director at Evanston Township, Matt Bufus, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, he contacted me back in June and told me that the Chicago Jazz Orchestra had actually recommended me because we did the same thing, I think, 2 years ago now with Slide Hampton and Perez Whitted.
That's right,
So that was kind of cool that, you know, now we get to do it with my quintet. So.
Well, and you have a regular quintet. We talked a little bit before we started on camera. Talk a little bit about who's going to be performing with you on February 15th.
Sure. So my quintet these days has kind of been shifting around a little bit, but I've had the pleasure to play with certain guys pretty regularly, and that includes Norman Palm on trombone, Ivan Taylor, great bassist who performed with Mulgrew Miller for the last 7 years of his career, and also joining us will be Richard Johnson on piano. Richard, of course, he performed with Wynton Marsalis and the Lincoln Center Orchestra, Bobby Watson. His you know, resume goes on and on.
Yeah,
and then, of
right?
course, the great drummer, Xavier Breaker. So,
who's played with his share of people as well.
Oh,
even though
Dr.
he's super
Lonnie
young,
Smith,
man. I mean, it's incredible,
people,
right?
Ernie
it's
Watts.
Incredible. So are you going to be playing standards? Do you have original compositions that people can check out? I mean, what's
sure.
the repertoire?
It'll be kind of a split between some standards, but more specifically the Jazz Crusaders repertoire.
Okay.
Norman Palm and I have been friends for over, you know, a decade now, probably about 12 years since the old Velvet Lounge days when I used to go to the jam sessions. Me and Norman would play all the time there, and we've been playing together for about 10 years, and over the last couple years, Norman put me onto, like, the Jazz Crusaders repertoire that I had actually not really checked out, other than, you know, they're known for their Crusaders stuff.
Right, right.
But people don't know about the stuff from the mid-50s, late 50s, even into the 60s, and even the early 70s, the Jazz Crusaders stuff that they had before they put out, you know, Street Life and all that
stuff.
Right,
right, yeah.
So we have, I've transcribed some of their charts, and, you know, since it's him and I up front, you know, trombone and saxophone, it makes sense to perform some Crusader stuff as well. But there will be quite a bit of originals because I'm trying to work on another record. So,
I mean, that kind of, let's kind of wrap this around because you're doing the Evanston High School Jazz Festival. There's lectures, there's clinics throughout the entire day. You are going to be doing a lecture, actually, during the day. It's really cool. I think it's open to the public during the day as well, so you can go see some of the high school bands. I think there's over 30 or 40 high school bands that participate throughout the entire day, and then it culminates with a headlining concert.
Right, right.
So let's talk a little bit, though, because you're deep into the education field as well. You're doing a lot of teaching.
Definitely.
What inspired you when you first were coming up? Was there a teacher? Did you hear jazz when you were growing up? How did you suddenly get interested in it?
Sure, that's a good question. I think I have kind of a different answer than most, you know, jazz musicians or you know, people playing jazz these days. A lot of people will be like, oh, my parents, you know, put me on the jazz when I was five and they were playing Coltrane or whatever. I didn't really hear about any straight ahead jazz or you know, jazz greats until I was almost 17.
Oh, really?
Midway through my junior year of high school.
What were you listening to?
That's the first time I heard Charlie Parker.
You were playing sax, though, right?
Yeah, I've been playing saxophone since I was eight.
Yeah.
In elementary school, I started in third grade. And at that time, it was just a lot of, like, more soul jazz, so like Grover Washington Jr., Kirk Whalum, Gerald Albright, three saxophonists who are still big influences on me to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that, my dad is a big-time Motown and soul fan, so I was raised on a lot of music like that. My parents are from the Caribbean, specifically the country of Belize, and so I grew up on a lot of Caribbean music, punta music, reggae music, calypso music. Bob Marley was, you know, played all the time in our house, you know. So I grew up on a lot of different music that, you know, is groove oriented and, you know, African oriented really, which jazz pulls a lot of, Sure, you know, it's, yeah, of its right, traits yeah. from Africa. So right. it was kind of natural for me to get into jazz, you know, hearing Coltrane and hearing Sonny Rollins and people like this. My junior year, I was blown away. So it was kind of late for me to get into improvising.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, because every musician I talk to, especially like your generation or even older, even into my generation,
sure.
we've all been influenced by all these different styles of music, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it's not like back in the 50s or the 40s. They were influenced by a lot of different styles right. of music, too, but some of it was big band, some of it was swing, some of it was sure. ragtime. This is like, you know, R&B, 70s stuff, calypso, reggae. I mean, all of that stuff kind of melds into your style, right?
So it's
interesting to me because I think that, you know, as you're growing as an artist, you start to find your own voice. Are you finding that you're not really worried, oh, well, this isn't exactly a Charlie Parker lick, but you know
sure.
what? This yeah. feels really good, and I might play this over a Bob Marley tune or something, right?
Definitely,
because it's inside of you, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it stylistically fits, then, you know, anything is available, and that's... That really speaks to the idea of, you know, students or anybody learning how to improvise should be absorbing different styles of music, whatever, you know, whatever floats their boat. If you don't like reggae music, then don't practice it. But, you know, somebody calls you for a gig that's paying a lot of money and it's all reggae, then you lose, you know. So it's, you know, for me, I just, especially when it comes to writing and playing, I just try to play what's naturally coming to me or what I hear in the music, you know, and that does come from practicing those styles and really absorbing those styles so that you can be ready in the moment to interact and
right.
to, you know, give off whatever energy to the audience and interact with your fellow
yeah,
musicians.
Yeah, right. Well, and it helps you also find your own voice. So down
Definitely.
The road, all of a sudden,
Definitely.
Now you're playing a lot different than you were when you were 17,
Definitely.
But
yeah.
you have all these different styles
oh,
involved.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit when you were 17. You
sure.
found jazz, you found Charlie Parker.
Mm-hmm.
First, I would assume,
yeah.
right? Is that so? What happened when you heard that? Were you like, "Oh my God, what is this?"
I was blown away. I didn't know that the alto saxophone could sound like that. You know, because Grover Washington Jr., as great as he is, he's not playing bebop
no,
in
yeah,
style.
Right.
You know, if anything, you could associate him more with, you know, a Hank Crawford or like Cannonball Adderley, soul jazz type of, you know, influence, which, you know, does come from bebop, and there are some bebop aspects to his playing, but he's not playing straight ahead. Bebop, you
right,
know?
Right.
So Charlie Parker was just mind-blowing to me. I'm hearing all these sounds, these different alterations to chords and all this, and I'm like, first of all, I didn't know they were alterations back then, but it was a new sound for me. And so I just, on my winter break of junior year, I just sat down and I opened the Jamie Ebersold book, actually.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I went
yeah.
to the back where the scale syllabus is, and they had half diminished scales and diminished scales and Locrian and, you know, all these different
right.
things, whole tone, and I was like, what is this? Because I had only known about major scales up to that point.
Sure,
I didn't
yeah.
even know about major scale modes. So I just
wow.
was like, oh, wow, there's other scales? So I took those 2 weeks and I learned basically all the modes of the major scale, which, you know, can lead you into the alterations and all these different things that the bebop innovators were doing. And so, yeah, I heard Bird and I started transcribing him, you know, the beginning of my senior year or
mm-hmm.
so. One of my first mentors is the great Gerard Harris, who's a great saxophonist and educator here in town. And I remember I brought in a Jackie McLean transcription, and he looked at this one part. I had written the notes out with no chords on top of it at all. And he just pointed to this one bar, these two bars, and he was like, doesn't that look like a 2-5-1 phrase to you? And I just looked at him, and I was like, yeah, whatever that
yeah,
is,
whatever
that is. And then, you know, he explained the theory behind it and all this stuff, and from there I just, you know, really tried to absorb as much of that bebop
yeah.
vocabulary as I could.
Well, that had to, like, when you first started playing all those modes and things,
mm-hmm.
just in the back of the Jamie Ebersold book, that had to be like, your ear had to be like, what is going on here, man? Because you never
yeah.
experimented with that before.
No.
You didn't know what it was.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I, up to that point, I was mostly just playing in a jazz band, but, you know, and you take your little solos and stuff, but you don't know. I would see these chords on the page, and it was just like, oh, whatever, it's in G. I'll just play whatever's
yeah.
in G and
yeah.
try to, you know, but then the key would change in the middle of the form, and I wouldn't make the change. So it's, you know, studying at that point and really taking an interest in getting the craft together, you know, obviously is going to build your ear and your skills to be able to, you know, make a better musical statement over
sure,
time.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, did you went off to college, I assume?
So my college experience is a little weird. I was a big-time science and mathematics
oh, okay.
nerd in high school.
Yeah.
And up until that junior year, you know, I was taking AP chemistry, AP calculus, all these courses that, you know, was basically
I couldn't handle that, man. I just forget it.
At this point, I can't handle it either, man. My little sister studied mechanical engineering, and sometimes I looked at her homework and I was like, that looks vaguely familiar, but I don't know what that is anymore. You know?
I'm going to go practice some scales.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm out of here.
Right. But at that time, I was going to pursue a chemical engineering degree, yeah, or maybe go and try to be a doctor or a medical doctor or something like that. But I got, like I said, my senior year is when this really started to develop inside of me, this fire to practice and really to learn about music. And, you know, I would do my science courses and whatever I had to do in high school and finish the school year, and then went to college, started in chemical engineering at UIC, right?
Okay.
Down the street.
Yeah,
there.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I would go to class, and it was great. Like, I would get in, as a freshman, I was in junior level chemistry courses.
Wow,
it was killing, man.
Wow.
I mean, in that perspective, it's killing. Like, if I was pursuing that engineering thing,
yeah,
still, it would have been great. And I would go to the classes, you know, I'd understand the material for the most part, but then I wouldn't do my homework. I'd go straight to the practice room and practice. And at that time, Orbert Davis was the director of jazz at UIC, and I got to know him, and I just quickly got away from the science stuff, and
yeah,
you know, after failing a few courses,
oh.
It made sense to kind of switch over to what I was interested in. But even then, being in the music program, you know, you have all these, when I was younger, I didn't really care about anything else but practicing.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't, but
yeah,
time is not the same as it was when
no,
I was 17.
I know.
You know, you have all these music history courses and this and that. I didn't even want to be in that, man. I just wanted to be in the practice room and
yeah,
transcribing and learning tunes. And so after a while, I started failing some of those courses too. But at the same time, like, actually, when I was walking in, I was telling you about this in this space here. I was in a band called Kids These Days, which I joined when I was 17, I think. And the majority of the group went to Whitney Young High School, which is right
yep,
down the street
right next
here.
Door, yeah.
And they were all young. They were like freshmen and sophomores at Whitney Young, and I had just graduated high school. But I knew a lot of the horn players and some of the kids from the group because they were all young players on the jazz scene, studying at the
yeah,
Ravinia program or Merritt School of Music, which is also around the corner here. And that band started to really take off, and we had built a big following. And so at that point, it made sense for all of us to kind of like put college on hold, or in my case, drop out.
Sure, yeah.
And just start working with that group and doing a little touring. I eventually ended up quitting that band, but after that, I just, you know, I was on the scene, getting calls to do
yeah,
this, starting to develop my band. And it just didn't make any sense to go spend money on college when I could just make money
that's
you know,
it.
Playing music.
Yeah,
you know?
That's it. Well, so, you have to pursue what you want to do.
Definitely.
And if you're not passionate about something, when you get to the, you know, once you get into college, it's like, well, you got to make some decisions and whatever
definitely,
makes the most sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm the same way. I didn't, you know, I played and did all this stuff. I
yeah,
never graduated. I came back and started playing. That was it.
And I mean, like, you know, Charlie Parker didn't graduate from anywhere.
No, know? Yeah.
You know, he barely made it through a couple years of high school, but.
You mean when you go to Andy's, they don't ask you for your degree before you can play? That's weird.
Usually they ask me for recordings.
Yeah, right.
if somebody ever asked, make sure you guys don't ask for degrees here either, man. Like,
No. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'll be the first one kicked out if that's the case. So that's interesting. So you're playing around town and everything, but then you're also, we talked a little bit too, you're a composer, you
mm-hmm,
write music. When did you start writing music? And, you know, because it's
sure,
one thing to play gigs and mess around and maybe, you know, oh, well, this is kind of a cool melody, but actually sit down, compose stuff
yeah,
and write it out is a different animal.
Sure. So composing for me is something that I still consider it to be an amateur love for, because I haven't really made the habit of composing. You know, it's something that, you know, I would really like to pursue. I have written tunes. I'm acting like I haven't done
yeah,
it before.
Right.
But typically these days, if I hear a melody, I'll sing it into my phone. Or I play quite a bit of piano. So if I'm messing around with some chords, I'll try to record that into my phone and hopefully develop it over, you know, a few weeks. But with my schedule, my teaching schedule and playing, it's been kind of cast to the wayside.
But that's a good tip, though. I think that's a good tip, because there's
definitely,
a lot of people watching this that might get a melody in their head and they don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone.
I mean, we have this technology. If
right.
If Coltrane had that, I'm sure he would have used it, too. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, if you can Snapchat yourself
mm-hmm,
going to the store,
yeah,
you can easily record yourself humming actually something productive.
Definitely. Imagine how many tunes like Duke Ellington would have wrote if he had something to record.
Yeah,
every
right.
Idea
yeah,
had,
it's amazing.
You know? And
right?
He already wrote like 3 3,000.
That's a great point. I mean, I never even thought of it that way. That's true. I mean, man, that's amazing. So but, you kind of catch the melody and then come back to it and work through it.
That being said, I am, you know, trying to force myself to write for like 30 minutes a day, every day at least. That's, you know, even if nothing comes out, if I just sit there and I play the same chords for 30 minutes and nothing happens. It's the habit. The habit of writing every day. It's like lifting weights or working out or something. You have to do it every day. You can't just do it, you know, for 20 minutes on Sunday or 3 hours on Sunday even and expect you to get something of value out of it if you're not doing it consistently. So I'm still in the process of trying to make that a regular thing so that I can be more productive in composing. But I mean I'm you know, with my first album, I remember I was finishing tunes up to like the day before the recording.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that you know, happens. So I mean, you're getting.
I gave myself a deadline, and you know, I had to get it done.
Yeah.
But I just tried to be as organic as I can with it. I remember at UIC, I was studying with the great R.E. Brown,
saxophonist,
and he's a great pianist as well. That's kind of where I got a lot of my piano knowledge, and he came into one of my lessons one time, and he was like, oh, you know, you should start taking melodies. This was kind of more for an arranging tip, but, you know, that applies to composing. And he said, you know, you should take these melodies that you're working on and try to figure out other chords that can fit on them, you know? And so that's where I did an arrangement of Donna Lee on my first record. That's the only non-original on there.
Yeah.
And that was started, like, a lot of those hits that are in that melody are from what Mr. Brown was showing
right,
in that lesson, you know? So.
Well, it's a great concept, too, right? I mean, that's a great way to start thinking about it. But I love the fact that you're talking about, like, that consistency everyday thing. It's just like practicing.
Definitely.
You know? I mean, I was always taught that every day you don't practice, you go back 2 days, which turns into a great motivator, because if you don't practice for 3 days, now what, you're, like, 6 days behind, and you start thinking about it, it starts adding up. Same thing with anything.
Yeah.
And you get into it. It's interesting because I've talked to a lot of different musicians from across the country that say the same thing. They'll sit down. If nothing happens, nothing happens, but at least they've made the effort to make it happen.
You have to. Yeah. You have to.
So now you've got a show coming up also at the Jazz Showcase coming up in March. You're doing a weekend at the Jazz Showcase. You've done that in the past, obviously. Yep. But this is with your quintet, March 19th through the 22nd. Of course,
that's right.
Jazz Showcase, 806 South Plymouth in Chicago, jazzshowcase.com. Mm-hmm. So who's going to be performing at that?
I think it's a similar lineup. I think I haven't finished solidifying it yet, but I know Norm is going to be on it. I believe Ivan Taylor's playing bass. Julius Tucker will be playing piano.
Oh, yeah, nice, yeah.
And waiting to hear back from a drummer to see if he can do it. But, similar lineup to the Evanston Township Festival.
Yeah,
so.
Those long runs at the Jazz Showcase, too, I mean, that really, your band warms up. So by the time Saturday night happens, it's like really cooking.
Right.
You know? So those are those nights that he's able to feature a lot of different repertoire throughout the entire weekend.
Definitely.
Two sets, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Of course, Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m., Save the Children, the Joe Siegel matinee. I've heard that 1,000 times, so I always mention that. You know, easy parking, too, by the way, right behind the Jazz Showcase. Yep. So that's going to be an exciting thing. But this weekend, February 15th, 7 p.m., Rajiv Haleem Quintet at the Evanston Township High School Jazz Festival. All the information is on the Evanston Township High School website. Check that out.
By the way, RajivHaleem.com.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
You can follow me there. I need to update my website, but there will be dates regularly up there, RajivHaleem.com, as well as Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can just type my name. I don't think anybody else has my name. So Rajiv Haleem, you can search that on all the social media.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was the one thing. See, I'm standing up. Usually I'm sitting at a table and I have all my stuff in front of me. So, yes. So, all right. So, check him out. Check his website for all of the upcoming dates because he's about to update it. I have a strong feeling.
Today. Which means by the time you see this video, it'll be updated.
It'll be updated. So, check that out. All the recordings are up there as well, I assume. Yeah, so, you can have access to all of that and some videos and things like that.
Yeah. The other thing I'm working on is just trying to film more of my gigs and just put up newer tunes and or just put up whatever sounds good. So you can also check me out on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
Just type my name in.
Yeah. Well, social media and all that stuff is always real active as well. So I mean, that's great. So, all right. So we appreciate you watching this, talking jazz here from the Epiphany Center for the Arts. And hopefully Rajiv will see you at Evanston High School on February 15th at the Jazz Showcase, March 19th through the 22nd. And if he doesn't see you there, and if I don't see you at one of those gigs, hopefully both of us will see you somewhere out on the scene.